This is The Producers, a podcast. The biggest names in audio production, station sound, radio imaging, branding, and voiceover. Interviews, tips, tricks, advice. To be a part of the show, visit RyanOnTheRadio.com. Now, The Producers with Ryan Dreen.
All right, welcome to it. I'll try and make a quick intro and give you a little more information on my my little special announcement here in the outro. Anthony Mendez, though, the guest, I had a great time chatting with him. I think I took just a shade over an hour of his time in between sessions. If you're in the world of voice, then this should definitely interest you. If you're in the world of audio production, I think you'll find some value in this as well. He's been in multiple corners of our industry. But right now, definitely well-known as a promo and trailer voice, as you'll hear in his promo demo. You absolutely have heard him on television and or radio or the internet. Anyway, he had some great viewpoints on ways to work in this industry. He brought forth some ideas that I don't think I had really heard anyone say before on, you know, technique, practice, relationships, different things. Anyway, very cool guy. I've conversed with him now for a couple years online. He's been checking out this podcast for a while, so I appreciate his time. Before the interview, though, I do want to make mention of something very cool I got my hands on. I'll get you a little more information about what we're going to be doing on my blog with it at the end of part two. But it's Assault by Rick Allen. If you are not familiar with it, it's a relatively new instrument that came out. It's in the Kontakt engine. I think that's how you would say it. It's built inside as a Kontakt instrument. Anyway, it's hard for me to really explain it in just a few words. I will say, though, the film world has been crazy for it since it was just recently released. But as a radio imaging guy who's constantly looking for new sounds and a guy who's, you know, you're always trying to elevate your game. So I'm trying to, you know, be a little more musical in all the things that I do, at least keep everything on tempo, you know, work in grid mode a lot more in Pro Tools. You just kind of want to take your imaging to a whole new level. This is a great way to do it. It pretty much gives you everything you love about a great sound design library and merges it with a great virtual instrument. You really got to try it out, or at least check out the videos on my site. So anyway, there's a post about it, my sort of quick introductory review, but I've also posted a lot of reviews from people that are much more talented than I. More in the film world, though. So Rick's trying to make sure that all his friends in the radio world are well aware of it. It's priced very nicely. I believe right now you can get it for $250. For something like this, it's crazy because, I mean, I'm not kidding. It's a monstrous sound design, you know, imaging nerd library. But it's also a musical instrument. You know, I'm saying you can create crazy cinematic beds out of it. And anyway, like I said, I could go on forever. So check out the blog post about it on my site, and I just might have a copy to give away of this. Our friends at Sample Logic have decided that they will give me the keys to the kingdom at least one time, and coming up in the next week or so, this will be pretty much mid to late March of 2013, we'll be giving away a copy on my website, so definitely be checking there to find out how to win your own free version of Assault. So now we get to the interview with Anthony Mendez. I'm going to start off by playing you his promo demo. The beginning of part two, you'll hear his trailer demo. And at the end of part two, I've got another little special that he just released. We'll hear some of that audio as well. So thanks again to Anthony, and here we go.
December 8th, 1980. A legend was gone. Now, through exclusive recordings and rare interviews, CNN counts down the weeks that led to Losing Lennon. Dateline's Friday Night Mystery. Play along, and you may see things that aren't there. Don't believe it. Our hidden cameras have the proof. Ask your friends. Did you see that? Dateline Friday, 10, 9 Central on NBC. Spike's Video Game Awards and the U.S. Army honor the strongest heroes of all time. Go to VGA.spike.com to vote for the strongest heroes of all time. And CNN Monday, Wolf Blitzer takes you inside President Obama's inner circle. Together, exclusively on CNN. This Christmas, what name says it all? Sherlock Holmes.
I'm going to make a stretch and just say it. I think you're going to like this movie.
Catch a sneak peek of Sherlock Holmes during Casado Conejos next Wednesday at 10.
And another podcast episode with a guy I've been wanting to chat with for a long time. Though, if you were paying attention to the blog, you saw Anthony Mendez featured. What is that? How many months ago was that, Anthony, when I got a little look into your studio?
I think it was at least 100.
Okay.
So it was last year sometime.
So Anthony's no stranger to the blog there, but I'm really glad to get a podcast interview going with you. So, Anthony, officially, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you, man. I'm a big fan, as you know.
Yeah, it's cool. I love it when, you know, people in various walks of this life, you know, kind of come out of the woodworks, go, hey, man, you know, nice show. And it's great. It was really cool to hear that from you. I respect your work a great deal. Now, right out of the gate, in case people want to go surfing around, I have to say I like your website a lot, AnthonyVO.com. But I like your website, man.
Thanks, man. Yeah, that's a... I redesign it about every year. I'm like stuck on it. You know, I went to school for architecture, so I have that designer in me, and I'm never satisfied. Any creative, I think, in any is never satisfied. So that one gets refreshed about every year. And a couple years ago, I said, you know what? I'm tired of coding stuff, you know, the CSS, the HTML, the XHTML, so on and so forth. So I decided to go with a dynamic one. So this one's kind of cool. You just upload video, thumbnail, boom, and it's done, man. People seem to like it, so I'm happy with it.
So you're a smart tech guy then. So you have something to do with the design? Did you literally design your site yourself and build it yourself?
No, that's the nice thing about this. I modify it, and obviously, you know, I know coding and stuff like that. I used to design all my sites from scratch. And I am a big tech guy. I'm not a master at anything. I just figure things out on how to get things done when it comes to tech. So this one, I said, you know what? I'm going to try this WordPress thing. You know, it seems like it's the big thing. And but this time, I'll just make sure I pay money for a premium theme. And that's basically what I've done. I've taken a premium theme. I think it cost me like $75 or $100 or $300 for like lifetime or something. And just installed it. Installed the theme and modified it. And knowing some code obviously helped because, you know, the CSS or the customization, for those that don't know, in terms of what they call the cascading style sheets. You can go in there, mess around with those, and basically made it look how I wanted it to look. You know, customized it. But it still has the basic engine of something that was created by Jason Schuller, I think is his name.
That's the guy who made the theme of your site.
Yep.
So, but yeah, I mean, really... I mean, because, yeah, you know, my site, there's a lot going on there. And, you know, there's a lot more than goes in, though, than just, you know, you don't just pop a theme up and say, okay, my site's done. You know, you got a lot of work put into that. And that's really cool that you're able to do that yourself. So that's definitely a good skill to have.
Yeah. My mama's proud.
That saves thousands of dollars. Well, anyway, AnthonyVO.com, people can go check out the site there. I do like the way it's laid out. It's simple, but it has a lot of content. There's a lot of things to see in all your demos. They can learn about you and check out a ton of recent projects. And as you said, you're pretty much, you're just creating a new post every time you want to put a new project up there. So it's real simple for you to keep updating really relevant new content.
Yeah, pretty much. The biggest challenge is, you know, getting a copy of your work. But since I focus mostly on TV stuff anyway, you know, I try to grab it myself once it's off the air, on the air, or if it's on YouTube. You know, every network now or every production company seems to have a YouTube channel. I just grab the YouTube video from there, edit it to change it, to make it easier to stream. And then the only thing I'm doing in terms of, you know, non-user-friendly stuff is taking a screenshot of a part of the video that I think it's pretty intriguing and using that as a thumbnail for the front page. But yeah, but it's basically a post. That's really all it is.
So, you know, I'll probably dance around a lot, or not dance around, bounce around a lot of issues, a lot of parts of your career and all that. But let's start right there. I've found I'm starting to book a little bit more and a little cooler projects. Getting copies of the work, are there secrets to that? Do you just, because, you know, you don't want to be like that annoying, you know, talent. Yeah. It's like, hey, come on, give me a copy, give me a... So, you know, how do you find that to be? How do you get copies of what you do? And also, you mentioned something about once it airs, do you literally have a way where you rip it off your DVR?
I do, actually. It depends on the work. I always, for the first job, you know, new buyer, new client, new network, I always ask up front, and I always use the excuse, hey, since it's our first time working together, you mind if I have a copy? But I only ask either between the next day after we finish the session or 5 days later. Because, you know, if it's too early, they kind of, they're on to the next thing, you know. And you don't, like you said, you don't want to be that annoying voiceover talent or that annoying talent asking for their copy of the work. And I never follow up. Unless it's something super grand that I might send a friendly reminder a couple weeks later. But that's it. I'm not, you know, I'm not on them. Because there's other ways for it to, you know, for you to get it. So on the TV, I have this thing called the Pinnacle Video Transfer. And I don't know if they still make it, but I'm sure there's something similar to it. My cable box has separate outs. I don't know. Maybe I just lucked out, but it has separate outs for video and audio. Run it into the thing and put a thumbnail drive in there. Hit record. Rewind it from the DVR. Make sure there's no guide on there. And take the thumb drive, put it into the computer, edit the video, and I'm done. If it's something that I happen to catch on TV, because if it's like, for example, right now I'm waiting for my Turner Classic Movie promo that's coming out, announcing the stuff for Roberto Rossellini for March, and so I have that channel on in the background, you know. So I'm listening to TV all day, so I get to hear different promos. But with Turner Classic Movies, it's a little bit more difficult because they don't have any real commercial breaks.
Right.
Other than in between the movies. So in that case, what I'm doing is I'm watching their YouTube channel. And there's a couple of different websites. I think it's either Save Vid or Keep Vid, either or.
Yeah. I'm aware of that, of ripping YouTube and Vimeo videos. Yeah, that there's a ton of plugins for that. Yep.
Yeah, so that's basically how I do it.
So, well, that sounds actually like a very simple video capture device then, really. At the end of the day, you're just simply live, you're rolling live the video and audio feed from your television into a little device which captures the video. That's pretty simple, really.
Pretty much, yeah. Yep, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like you used to record old school commercials or old school radio broadcasts. Same type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Same type of thing. Yep.
Yeah, it's just, it's funny. That was something recently I did a project, you know, that I was pretty proud of. And I asked them once, and then, you know, they're like, yeah, we'll get to it. Leave us alone. And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to just, you know. So then I'm thinking, but I really want that, you know. So I'm like, do I email them again? And, you know.
I try to just ask once, twice tops, and then just figure out ways to do it.
Well, cool. And I always forget, they can also follow you on Twitter. I will say this in the beginning. I think I've done, you might be my 55th interview, and I might have mentioned the Twitter, twice at the beginning of the interview. So you'll be the third time, it's at Anthony Vio if they want to follow you on Twitter, right? You're on there.
I'm pretty much on there all the time because I have my Twitter on the studio computer. I have it on my phone in the front. So yeah, Twitter's always an easy way to interact.
Cool. Well, I know you're basically a New York guy. In fact, it says it on maybe your Facebook or your site or something. But are you a Bronx guy? And are you living in Jersey now? What's your kind of background? Where you're from?
That's the deal. I was born in the Bronx, but we lived in Uptown Manhattan, Washington Heights, a.k.a. The Heights, as popularized by the musical. And then when we started entering high school, my parents decided to yank us out of Washington Heights. A lot of stuff was going on there that they didn't really want us around. They brought us over here to Jersey, which, you know, it's a big shock for a kid growing up in the city. Oh, you know, we thought it was just trees over here. We found it extremely boring at first. So every day after school, we used to take the bus back into New York to hang out with our friends. But eventually, you know, you kind of adapt to your environment. And I'm kind of glad and appreciative that my parents did that for us because, you know, some of my friends, unfortunately, aren't even around anymore because of all the stuff that was going on uptown. And So looking back, I'm very, very grateful. Plus, of course, the noise floor is lower in Jersey than it is in Manhattan. So that helps. Yeah.
I'm just curious because, New York City is a place I've always wanted to live, though. I think maybe I'm at the age where I no longer want to, but were you in a, you know, in a high rise? What's the neighborhood like there? You know, what kind of a building, what kind of a neighborhood is that?
It was, we were raised in Washington Heights first. And then at the time, Broadway was like the other side of the tracks. So then we kind of, you know, moved on up, quote unquote, to Inwood. which at the time was mostly Irish, and more Dominicans were moving into the area, like us. Hello. And it was all buildings there, obviously, you know. And our first that I can remember apartment was on the first floor. The second one was on the second floor. When we moved to Inwood, we lived across the street from a park, Inwood Park. So that was kind of cool because we always got to hang out there. That was like our backyard, if you will. So
yeah.
So it was great because, you know, you grow up in an environment where a lot of people are culturally similar to you. So in terms of music, food, all of that is available. But then you move to Jersey and it's very, very different. It's not obviously Washington Heights, and then you go to college and that kind of shapes you. So it was a different transition. I think all those little parts, you know, being the urban guy, being the suburban guy, the college educated guy, they all kind of shaped more or less who I am, and which comes out in, you know, in the work I do.
Do you think, so tell me a little bit about your education then. I mean, you said you went to school for architecture, so that worked out.
Yeah, exactly. It's a natural progression from architecture to voiceover. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Yeah,
I studied architecture. Yeah, well, I wanted to be a comic book artist, man. I used to be a big fan of Frank Miller, Todd McFarlane, and I studied, you might hear a beep, that's a call waiting. Ignore it.
Got it.
I studied comic book drawing, how to draw superheroes the Marvel way, and I taught myself how to draw. But when it came to choosing a college, I don't think it would fly. It was going to fly when I was to tell my parents that I wanted to go and be a Marvel artist at the time. So I ended up going into architecture, which I thought was going to be the most, quote unquote, professional of the arts. But it allowed me to draw and still have, you know, my parents can brag instead of my parents saying, oh, my son's a comic book artist. Now they can say my son's an architect. So I think I did that decision more for them than I did for myself. So I enjoyed it, but I didn't love it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So then from there I left and I worked in the family business for a little bit, which was the headstone business. Headstones.
Oh, wow.
And mausoleums, yeah. Which I guess gave me a little bit of a dark side. So I started writing music, and I thought I was going to be in the music business. So I started building a studio, and I had a studio in Jersey City where I would produce and engineer urban, Latin urban tracks like reggaeton when it started, you know, making a rise and stuff like that in Latin hip hop. And I started mixing for those artists that wanted, you know, dub plates or that wanted vinyl to give out to the DJs. And I still remember my first credit. It was on a song called Face Down, Ass Up, which I still have. It says music mixed and edited by Anthony Mendez or something else. That was my proud achievement in the engineering world.
And, well, that made Mom proud, I'm sure.
Oh, it sure did. My kids love it.
Yeah. So at what point do you decide, hey, my voice sounds pretty good. I'm gonna, you know, do this as a career. Was that a slow, kind of a slow burn? Were you getting into it like that? Or was it just you flipped the switch one day?
When I realized that music to pay the bills kind of sucked, man. It was tough, you know. You end up staying up till 3 or 4 a.m., 5 a.m., coming home at 6 when your wife is going to work. And you realize, where's the money? You know, hopefully it comes on the back end if your project gets picked up, so on and so forth. So I said, I got to do something to make money. So I started producing radio commercials for my partner's business, which was on the same floor. He let me rent out the space for my studio. And that was club and concert promotions, you know, like the touring stuff. So I started producing that. And I also started producing spots for WSKQ, La Mega, here in New York, 97.9. But that was freelance. In other words, what would happen is my partner's club promotion company would do the media buys at WSKQ. And instead of having them produce a spot, because, you know, after a while, a lot of those radio spots sound the same to them and they wanted it to stand out a little bit. So they hired me to do the production. I was always very musical. I studied music for a while. I taught myself the basic fundamentals of music. So my spots were very musical. I would never end a spot in the middle of a you know, an upbeat or something, and I would never just switch from one song to the next without it kind of being its own mix. So I started producing radio spots. And I remember at the time, that's when I subscribed to Rap Magazine, Radio and Production. I started reading about Dave Fox, and I was like, wow, this dude really, he knows his stuff. You know, it's very similar to what I've been wanting to do. So I sent Dave an email. He was the first radio guy I sent an email to, and he took a look at one of my mixes. He says, yeah, do this and do that, and that changed everything for me. The problem was that the production of my club and concert spots sounded like radio imaging spots, which the station wasn't too happy about. So they tried to get me into the fold, and they offered me a job. You want to come work in the production department to produce for us? And I was like, wow, I was tempted, right? Because, you know, I had just left my day job 2 years earlier. I needed a steady income. But I had turned it down, man.
Now, why did you have to turn it down?
I felt like since I just left my day job working for somebody else, I was scared of getting trapped. Had they offered it to me immediately upon leaving, you know, which would not have happened, but had they, I would have said, heck yeah, you know, I could use an extra $30,000, $35,000 a year, steady income, you know?
Right.
So, but I turned it down because I felt I was going to get trapped in there. And at that point, voiceover has started to intrigue me. And I didn't know what it was, but I can tell that there was a difference between the voiceovers that were done by the jocks and the voiceovers from the national buys, you know?
And I said, I kind of like these guys. Give me a frame of reference about, you know, what year is this, you know?
This was, good question. That was, I left my day job in 2002. I was producing and engineering music. I shifted to radio production in 2003 to 2004. So there was about, it was about 2004 to 2005 when I got offered the job, yeah.
It's been getting a little better every year, I would say. But there's, without a doubt, anyone who works in the voiceover field knows exactly what that radio sound that you don't want if you want to be, you know, in the real big time world. So that's funny. You heard that without really having ever worked inside a station. And you hadn't, that point, you weren't a professional voice artist yet, right?
That's right, yeah. But there was something, you know, I had good ears for stuff, and I could kind of break things down to almost, you know, its basic elements. So it wasn't that I thought that the radio jocks were bad. It's just that I kind of wanted to work, you know, instead of voicing, you know, a club at XYZ, supper club at night, Friday nights, I kind of wanted to do, you know, McDonald's, Burger King, Cadillac. You know, I kind of wanted to do the brand stuff.
You wanted to make 100 times the money. Yeah, we get it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, at this point, though, it sounds like you basically have just decided, you know, I hear what's good. You know, at least you know what's right, what's good.
Yeah.
But you aren't really a professional voice talent yet. So how do those steps happen? Where do you start getting gigs on the regular?
Google was very much in its early stages at the time, but I relied on it for basically everything. At the time, I think it was Yahoo and Alta Vista. Which I have no idea if that's even around, but it was Yahoo and Alta Vista, but they weren't giving me the search results for voiceover that I wanted. So when I went to Google, I saw, oh, look at these places. Look at this. And I found Voice 123 at the time.
Oh,
and I said, okay, let me look through here. And again, I wasn't trained, but I can hear the guys that were kind of national, had national reads, and I can hear the guys that kind of didn't. And I said, if I can get some of these guys, and I can tell them that I'm going to offer them jobs. I created a company called StripDot. And the idea behind StripDot was to get to book voiceovers. And we were only going to have like six. I think I had on the site maybe six or seven. One of them female, two Spanish, and then the rest were all English, general market guys. One urban guy, and then me. Because, of course, you know, I am running the company. I'm going to throw myself in there. I didn't realize I sucked at the time. Because when you suck, you don't really hear it, right? That's the whole premise of how American Idol started. So I set up this website. I reached out to these guys. Hey, what are your rates? I'm going to start this thing called StripDot, and maybe I'll get you some work. Do you have MP3? They said, yeah. Most of them were, you know, they were open to the idea. So I was like, okay. So I booked a couple of them. I was able to get jobs for like two or three of them. And then I got tired of negotiating. People calling me for rates, and I was like, that's not what I want to do. I said, I just want to do the spots myself. So since I knew people in the music business, I reached out to this one public relations lady that I knew, and I said, hey, I would like to do voiceovers. And she says, that's funny. My husband works at a TV station, at a TV production company, and they have a show that's starting up, and they're looking for a in-show guy to do bumpers and billboards for promos. I was like, okay. I didn't know anything about, you know, promos. Uh-huh. But I said, okay, why don't you go in an interview? And it was for a show called American Latino. And American Latino was previously Urban Latino, right? So I meet with the ladies, the people that were supposed to hire me. They had me read. I read. They liked me. They said, okay, we're going to offer you a job. I said, what does it pay? It says, it pays $75 an hour. And again, I don't know anything about the voiceover business, but coming from a job when I left my day job that was paying 25 or 27 an hour to 75, I thought, whoa, this is great. Yes, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Little did I know that when they called me in for the sessions, that they would try to cram in as much as they could within 1 hour.
Oh, certainly. And how often was that? Once a week? Once a month?
Well, exactly.
I mean, twice a week?
Once a week. Once a week. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. So, I mean, hey, you got a cool job right out of the gate. A lot of people can't say that. But you also had a nice little lesson about the business, I guess, real fast.
Real fast. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, things went a lot better from there. Why don't we jump to maybe one or two of the real big turning points in your career? Because obviously now, you know, you're everywhere. You make a great living doing this. But a couple things had to have happened along the way that, you know, big stair steps.
Yeah, there were. I think, again, my inexperience or my naivete of the business kind of helped me because initially, I started doing more voiceovers for the club stuff, and I started doing more voiceovers for the radio station. You know, still freelance for the people that wanted to do outside media, outside production included with their media buys. So I was doing that, and at one point I said, you know, I've done spots for Amtrak. I've done spots for Western Union. Mind you, it was really just spots for the radio station, but these were the, you know,
oh, certainly.
The product. So I said, I'm going to create a postcard and put all these things on there. Instead of saying that I was working for the radio station, I'm going to put these logos of these companies on the postcard. So it was a little white lie, but not really, you know. Mm-hmm. I sent it out and sent it out to all these casting directors, sent it out to all the agents. And I got three phone calls back, two different agents and one casting director here in New York. And they said, why don't you come in? You obviously have experience. You have some nice credits. This was, I think, CESD at the time, here in New York. And Innovative was the other one. And I started kind of freelancing with them. But it was all Spanish, man. And although Spanish was the first language that I learned, obviously, from my parents, you know, I'm first generation American, right? So you're going to learn the language of your parents first. But I think in English, and my strongest vocabulary is in English. So I wasn't happy about the fact that I was just getting Spanish stuff. So anyway, to make a long story short, because I can keep you on here forever, I basically started working with Maurice Tobias. And once I started working with her and realizing what promos were and things like that, it changed everything for me. So on my 3 months later, I kind of wanted to go out to LA to record some demos with Maurice. And I asked my New York office, which I had signed with in November, I think this was November of 05, 06. I think it was November of 06, and to introduce me to the LA office. They didn't exactly do that, so I went out there and Maurice had told me that somebody else was interested, so I ended up signing with an LA agent. So my New York agent wasn't happy about that. And again, you know, I'm green, I'm new to the industry, so I said, you know what, I'm going to have to let you go. So I fired my New York agent 3 months after signing with them. And I don't think I would have done that had I had more experience in the business and knowing who they were. But as a new kid, you know, I didn't really care. So I said, I kind of like what LA is bringing to me. They're giving me stuff in English. They're giving me urban stuff. They're giving me and Spanish stuff. I was only getting Spanish in New York, only two or three auditions a week. So my LA agent introduced me to Paul Wintner. And then they introduced me to, which is my manager in LA for trailers. And then they introduced me to a New York agent here, and I signed with New York. So I was like, all right, now I'm going to make it. Little did I know that I still had 4 or 5 more years to go before I really thought I could make a living at this.
So that I already wrote down 20 questions. Now I have another 5 questions. But the point at which you kind of felt you made it, it still took you a solid 5, 6, 7 years, basically.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've only been doing it, I guess, since 04 dabbling, right? 06 signed. So it took me a good 3 to 4 years before I started getting stuff that I could, you know, post on my website.
I understand.
So it takes about 4 to 5 years before I can say, you know what, I'm doing it. I'm really doing it.